This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 393, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 393. I am Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Connor is not here, so we got. It's a lot better, to be honest with you. We got Ryan Haupt.
Howdy. I got a beer, so I'm ready to replace Connor.
Oh, how many are you in?
Because just one. I started one just for the show. This is a special show only beer.
Anybody lose any appendages over this holiday break?
I'm down a thumb. I'm hoping that won't be a thing, but. Hitchhiking already a problem.
I got some frostbite, but that was only because there was snow.
That's awesome. I would have killed for snow.
It was very cold. It was really cold snow. Like it felt like it was even colder than snow normally is.
Yeah.
But maybe that's because it's July.
Somebody stole the flag off my lawn. I had the little, the flag and the thing.
Really?
And they took it. I mean, not like a huge like Bill the Butcher kind of like, wrap around yourself kind of flag, but one of the little things. And I guess they took it. For their,
they're just that patriotic.
Their patriotic festivities, yeah.
Whoops, so. Couldn't resist.
I've had Bill the Butcher in my head for like a week since you typed that name. That's my favorite shot in that whole movie.
I know.
What's the matter? Your mouth all glued up. Anyway, then he says a dirty word. iFanboy.com is our website. It's about comic books, which up until this point you may have had no idea about if you just started listening. We read comics. Every week we read a lot of them collectively and individually, except it wasn't too many this week. One of us picks the one that is the best that they read that week. They write up about it on the website. That's the pick of the week. We're going to be talking about that issue, and we're going to be talking about the other books from the week and some other stuff. And hopefully our hope is that it is both thoughtful, informative, and entertaining. It's a lot to go for. Before we get going, if you haven't read your books yet, you should be warned that we're going to be talking about the stuff that happened in them. So there will be spoilers. So, sack up. Let's just don't worry about it. Let's just roll. You know what I'm saying? Paul.
I had a pick this week. I did. Previously on iFanboy. Oh, man. All the books came out this week. This is crazy. What's going to come out next week? It was an interesting mix of books this week. And I kind of went in not knowing what the hell I would pick. But I went with Satellite Sam number one, which was a very pleasant surprise. It's by Matt Fraction and Howard Chaykin. And we talk about the good and the bad Chaykin. This is great Chaykin, I thought at least. And this is a black and white book. It's set in 1951. And it's about live television broadcasting, production, smut, murder, all those great things that we love around here. I'm sure you did some TV production classes.
I had some fun with that. I did all the same ones.
Did you work on Shop Till You Drop?
I did.
You did?
I did. I was the prize coordinator on Shop Till You Drop. I built the boxes.
So I don't know if you had the same experience, but for me, I took a TV production class in college part of my major, and it freaked me out. It got me very anxious, and I kind of had some night terrors with this, because what Fraction captures so well with this script, and it's something that he's been doing with the rhythm in Hawkeye. He does this there's this great patter, this great rhythm, and this great energy to the dialogue, and it's a lot of overlapping stuff, and sometimes you see the same word balloons repeated because it's those words being said in the booth and then those words being heard on the stage. And this is a 1951, like a sci-fi, kind of a Flash Gordon kind of show called Satellite Sam. And this is, I guess it's mostly real time, this issue. And it's a 3:45 in the afternoon, and it's the Satellite Sam show, and I guess it's a 15-minute show. And they're missing their main actor. They're missing Satellite Sam, who's this older gentleman named Carlisle White. And his son happens to work in the booth. And I guess he's some kind of technician. He goes into the grid and replaces some light bulbs and stuff. And I really love the way he captured what it's like, the intensity of having to produce a live show and having to kind of improvise when things go wrong, having to go up and replace those light bulbs and shit, walking along the grid and trying to.
And also, you know, it was new at this time.
Yeah.
So although while a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, Ready Camera One, Take Camera One, that stuff, I mean, I was taught that. Like, I did all that stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's all the same, but you got like everything else they're kind of making up as they go along. And it's these, you know, men in suits, you know, this weird vibe, and they're, everybody looks really professional, but you know, they're all just kids that don't really know what they're doing because it's new and they're trying to get by, and there's huge stakes because they're, you know, there are three channels, you know, I mean, now you can do a show on cable and, you know, if you're on TV, then it was a really big deal. And it was sort of the beginning of the whole thing. I was super impressed by this for lots of reasons. I think the most of which, I've never read a comic book like this. I never read one that felt like this and had this kind of pacing. This felt like watching an episode of The Newsroom when they sort of kick in and get going, but with with a vintage vibe to it at the same time. And I was super impressed that feeling and that patter that you're talking about, this constant motion, and he didn't explain anything. I was like, thank God I have experience in this, because otherwise I wouldn't know what half these words were supposed to be for.
Or, I was, you know, a little lost.
I can see that, but I kind of always, I appreciate that when I understand it, and I don't when I don't. So it's subjective, definitely. But you know, definitely another sort of step forward in the Matt Fraction bag of tricks that he's got. I've never read anything like this, and I think that was the thing that impressed me the most. It was a different comic book.
Yeah, I was, you know, I wasn't in my head, I wasn't like, this is, I wasn't thinking this is a contender for the pick of the week when I first picked it up. I was like, okay, it's the new Fraction thing, I'm gonna check it out. And with Fraction, it's kind of hit or miss for me. There's things I really, really like a lot, like Hawkeye, and then there's things that just totally don't work for me.
The more that happens, the more I think that's a good sign of a good creator. It has to be said, you know, because they're doing different things.
And I'm very impressed though that he's doing these very specific things that you, it's really going to work for you if you're on that wavelength.
I honestly don't believe that there is a large enough audience for this particular problem.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Well, Ryan, you said you were a little bit lost with this. Was to the detriment of the book, or did you catch up with it, or did it never win you over?
By the end, I felt like I at least knew the thread of the story.
Okay.
But those first, I think the problem was, maybe problem's the wrong word, but it drops you right in the middle of it, which is nice because it's quick and it's snappy, like you guys have been saying. But those first few pages are so dense and jargony that I did get a little lost, and it took me a while to feel like I'd caught back up. I would say the moment where the book clicked for me was when the guy is replacing the light bulb. I love that scene.
That sequence was wonderful.
Yes.
It's showing the guy doing the advertisement for like the cream of wheat, and you see there's this little sound effect that just says pop, and you don't know where it comes from or why. And then they show on the next page that the guy's replacing the light bulb and he drops it and you see the light bulb break and create the pop that you just saw on the previous page. And that was when I was like, oh, okay, I get what this is now. This is really cool.
Yeah, there's overlapping stuff and it gives you new context. And you
can, I liked it. And so that so then I kind of went back to the beginning of the issue and said, let's try this again, and it got a lot more out of it that second time.
Yeah, but it's I just think it's cool. It's like multi-layered. There's so many different things going on and from different directions. And we did the best panels of the week this week. And I chose the full page where Carlisle White never shows up because he's dead. That's the thing. And his son, Mikey, who's hitting the sauce a lot. That's what we know about him so far. And he's the guy who was replacing those light bulbs. He's like, one of the guys comes up to him and says, you're kind of your dad's size and you could fit into the spacesuit, right? And it's just one line at the end. And they push him out, and you don't see it from like the audience's perspective or from the camera's perspective. You see it from like the background grips kind of perspective as they're like pushing him out.
The lighting on that page is fantastic. This is black and white. I don't know if we mentioned this, but the way that they achieve the depth and the lighting on that, it's really impressive. I'm just staring at it right now. Like,
I love the aesthetic of the book, and it's great Chaykin, because he's such a great choice for that book, because those faces, and especially like the advertiser or the executives, you know, the sponsors that they bring in, like they decide we're gonna bring in some of these guys who are maybe gonna donate some money to us, be sponsors, and it happens to be the worst possible day to bring them in to the production. It's sort of like a signature like Sorkin pilot thing. It's like it's the worst possible day, and something has gone terribly wrong.
The way that he draws these clothes throughout is super impressive,
and even the faces, it's almost like political cartooning, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just these old guys and the names like Doc and Ike and stuff like that, and it's that era, and everybody's got a cigarette, and you know, it's got that aesthetic of like a Lucky Strike floating in a, you know, like a tumbler or a mug of coffee or something, and it is. So it's, I mentioned in the review on the site that it's very cynical. So I mean, we mentioned the newsroom and we keep saying Sorkin, but it's not romantic or swashbuckling at all. It's actually very grim. And yeah, this guy is murdered, and in this flop house, and his son comes in and he finds this box under the mattress, a couple of boxes filled with like boudoir photos. And it's, you know, it's just like the Betty Page kind of thing of, you know, women in garter belts and stuff and posing. And we don't know. And there's a lot of women and there's a lot of photos, and we don't know how this guy died and if he was murdered. That's the suspicion from his son, and who did it, and where are all these women? Are any of them suspects? And the cover kind of leads you in that direction as well.
The cover is also, I mean, I was actually looking at the way that he drew like the underwear, and I'm like, did he do that all by hand? Like, he drew all the lace stitching and stuff. It's really good.
I mean, it's like a doily, you know. It's that intricate. And
then it gets closer together as we hit the shadowing, and it's just like it's a super sexy cover in like that sort of classic sense. And not in the same way that his last book would be considered by some to be sexy.
Black Kiss 2.
It was a bit much.
Right.
I was blown away by just how good looking this was. This was I've never seen Howard Chaykin stuff that looked this good. I feel like it was like now you don't have to draw superheroes for a little while. Just do a thing that you really like to draw.
The scene where the woman comes out onto the street in New York, mm-hmm. and she's got this is kind of nostalgic for me. My late aunt used to work at the original John Wanamaker's, and right behind this woman, there's the John Wanamaker's signature logo. And John Wanamaker's department stores aren't around anymore, but that was just kind of cool to see. And just the way the advertisements and stuff, and you're coming out of this smoke-filled, you know, studio and into the hustle and bustle of early 50s New York, and it's just such atmosphere, and you could almost, you know, hear like the horns honking, and
yep.
You know, it was so I was really blown away by this, really pleasantly surprised, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
The other thing that came out sort of last week, sort of this week, but we're gonna talk about it now. Yeah. The Private Eye number 3, the third issue, digitally distributed from Brian K. Vaughan and
Marcos Martin.
I have a bit of a confession, I think.
Uh-oh.
I don't love this.
Really? Okay.
Like, I like it. I like this issue a lot, actually. Yeah. But, like, after the last one, I was like, So when it came out, I wasn't like, oh, I got to get that immediately. I was like, it's fine.
Was it,
I don't get super excited for it.
Was it, you know, just how big the fanfare was for the first issue and we all went kind of crazy over it? And that was a pick of the week. And then the second one came out and was it just, like, more of the same or just not your particular milieu that you find interesting?
The thing so far is that I'm not particularly enamored with any of the characters because they all have to wear masks and they all, like, I don't feel like I really know any of them or what they're going other than there's just a low-grade paranoia because of the world they live in. So I find it's anxious for me.
Well, here we find out a little bit more about our PI character that his mother died a horrible death. And it related to those masks and the identity stuff. And there's dream sequences here, and it starts on the cover, which is kind of cool. That the cover leads directly, it's sort of like the first panel of the book in it. And me and you aren't huge fans of dream sequences, but I felt like this was well done and didn't overstay its welcome.
Right away, I was like, "Oh, dreams. Okay, no." Okay.
Flying naked through the sky, and
it was a page. It was okay.
The stuff with his mom and stuff, but but. I love the sequence where he and the girl are in his office and these guys who have broken in last issue are firing at them. And he says, you know, go limp. And she's like, why? And then he's pushing her through a window and they go, go falling. And he wakes up later. But I loved that sequence and how frantic it is. The choice in the layouts with, the detail shots of the bullets and the way we see the bullet graze her ear in profile, it looks like it went through her head. And that choice is important because that's what the bad guys think. They think that they, dealt a headshot there and she's down for the count. But then we find out later that, no, it grazed her ear. It didn't go through her skull. So she's okay. So that's a nice surprise. And a cool choice in composition there.
Good. And I think we need that. When I was like, is she dead too? Come on, let's.
Yeah, right, because her sister just died. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that was really fast. But then I was like, oh, I see what they're doing.
The French, again, just historically not good shooters.
they did blame this one on the masks, so it was a bit of a stormtrooper scenario.
There's always an excuse, though. The war was not finished. I don't know. They drove around. What are we going to do?
Exactly. But but you mentioned not having an entire grasp on the characters. One character I think is really super important is that granddad character.
I like him. He's my favorite.
He's great because he's us.
Yeah.
Did we see all of his tattoos in the first issue?
All of his
tattoos? I noticed them a lot in this issue where he's just covered head to toe in tattoos and they look terrible. Well,
we did see that in the first issue. Maybe not all of them.
I wasn't here and I didn't get to talk about it.
Okay. So. Well, no, but that's a great point.
I presume you read the first book, though.
That character is a commentary on like who we are and what we're going to become. And he's the one who's clinging to his iPhone, which hasn't worked in years. And he just wishes that would work. And even if he could get it, operable, the cloud doesn't exist anymore because the cloud burst. And so I think that character, maybe even more so than PI, our protagonist, is just really important to whatever commentary that Brian K. Vaughan is leveling. And he has mentioned even just in prepping this book and in the back matter that he's not super tech savvy, and this is kind of like Marcos Martín's thing setting it up online. He likes the idea of it being digital only, and we're never going to see this in print most likely, but he has certain ideas and certain paranoia, maybe anxiety about all of the stuff that we're putting out there online and all of the stuff that we're submitting to the cloud. And so this is maybe part of the larger picture other than just the plot itself.
Yeah.
And so that character I think is very interesting and just, and, you know, he sews up the kid and then afterwards he's like, yeah, no thanks for saving your ass again, dick. And they're on their way. I love the late title card in this issue.
It was really,
want to know what's going on with the rocket.
Well, that's the cliffhanger, right?
But I want to know it. Yeah, like, I feel like whether you like this issue or not, it left you with something that I wanted to come back for next time. Mm-hmm.
That's the Brian K. Vaughan move.
I'm glad he still got it.
And just for the other side of the argument, I really like the idea that it's all people in masks. And then that comes into play when they're on the trolley or whatever, or the shuttle.
I like the idea
staring
of all of it. Yeah.
But, I can see your point that it does. you're at a certain distance from the characters, and you know, so that's good and bad, you know. Batman Incorporated number 12.
Oh, we needed to get some more kids killed, and it, thank God that at least I don't know if that was a kid, but it had a baby head.
Well, it's he's a petri dish kid, and you know the
Damien's brother clone or whatever, the one who killed him. This is Batman Incorporated number 12. This is the knockdown drag out fight between drugged up Man Bat Batman, questionable choice, and the Damien killer drone.
And he's got the armor and the electricity, there was an issue before this was the Chris Burnham issue where he wrote it, right? And then but this is picking up from when they're all flying towards Talia in the weird mask. There's a lot of weird shit going on in this book.
I'm of a couple of minds about this issue because A, it was really good that Burnham got to do the whole thing. He was just says Chris Burnham artist. It wasn't any fill-in pages or anything like that. He got to do the whole thing, and he got to do some really whacked out stuff. Every time Batman punched his arm and punched in that like exoskeleton suit with sort of the double fist thing, I kept looking at it. I was like, man, it's just fascinating. And I really liked how it was just all rendered and it was done really well. I started to have thoughts of like, if this happened, if there's a continuity between all these, no, not that, but if there's a continuity in this book and all the other Batman books.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be.
You can't think about that.
This is like a really – I know that. But you can't. I know. But if all that stuff doesn't matter, then why do we have to have Damian die and everything and they had to do this the sad Requiem issues and the blah, blah, and just all the angry Batman. So how come we only have to take the part of it that sucks? I don't know. It's just it's incongruous, which is fine. It's what happens. But I did think about it a little bit. The one-headed baby head creeped me out.
It does, yeah. It does reek of being like this weird mini maxi series thing that it's its own thing, but then it has this baggage that has to be carried by some of the other books. And
they're not carrying all of it, so why carry any of it?
Right.
Well, I'll admit freely to being completely lost whenever it's the meeting of all the other Batman Incorporated people.
Right.
So you've got like Nightwing and Tim Drake Jason Todd. But I couldn't tell you for the life of me what those pages are forwarding in the plot. Like I just don't know. And the only things in this book I felt like I could follow were the really well done fight scenes. And so Nightwing and Red Robin come in and help out Batman for a page, but then they're gone again and they're having a meeting with everybody else talking about stuff.
Yeah, like that where Tim's like, Dick, there's the guys with like skull faces. That's usually a bad sign, right? And like, no, maybe they're on our side. I don't know.
But I don't know. I don't know either.
No, I think that's a fair point.
Here's the thing. I think it's still Batman Incorporated, which isn't actually necessary, but as it is the title, we have to refer to it from time to time,
right.
I guess.
Right. What do you guys think about the depiction of Batman? I think it's sort of the Frank Miller goddamn Batman thing. It's All Star Batman sort of.
Well, it's a weird choice.
He's like roided up, right? Like he's and so he's addled.
It was a weird choice when he did that a couple of months ago.
Yes, it was.
But they already made that, and I guess I tend to, especially with the Grant Morrison Batman, I tend to try to just go with it.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting story. It looks great. It's not necessarily. I don't think of that character as Batman. I was like, I think of that as the Frank Miller Batman or the All Star Batman, the one who's like lifting up Robin by the scruff of his neck and he's I did kind of enjoy where he lands in a school bus and is just raging with these kids screaming terrified behind him, and they do point out that he's like kind of out of his mind. And everyone's like, Bruce, what's going on? And, that weird baby head gets loosed from the body that it's sitting on. And there's some really powerful images. It was actually kind of tricky narrowing down which ones to choose for best panels of the week. I ultimately went with Batman on the bus and the severed head while Talia gets on the helicopter.
You had plenty of choices.
And now it's all coming to a head.
And then she puts on a Batman suit.
Batman suit and is going into the Batcave. So I'm kind of excited.
It looks
to
reminiscent
see that.
Of the very old school Batwoman.
Yes, it does.
Costume.
Yes, I thought of that. I thought that as well.
Which I think Batman, didn't they get married in the Golden Age at one point? So
yes.
Kind of fits with his relationship with Talia, I suppose. I don't know.
Silver Age.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds more appropriate.
It's Golden Age, actually.
It's Late such
Golden Age. Anyways. Superior Foes of Spider-Man number one, but Nick Spencer, Steve Lieber.
What did you think?
This was a lot of fun. You know what's interesting? I think that I think Nick Spencer's been reading some Hawkeye.
Yeah, I got that too. With the way he played with the word balloons.
Yeah, there's a a bit of that infographic kind of thing. It didn't always work.
There's a dog.
Yeah, there's one that just totally didn't. It's on the page before the is this a sex thing? The page before that, he's like watching the TV and there's like an arrow to his face and then his mugshot is supposed to be on the news and it was sort of awkwardly laid out. And
I didn't even notice that.
It was just very odd with just arrows and stuff. And it was like, that's not a successful infographic. But otherwise this is a really fun idea for a book and I like that it's so playful and silly.
I was super impressed by this.
Yeah.
There was a couple of things where I was like, this feels a lot like if I got a chance to write a comic book. Like there was a few like that. Why would it be a sex thing? And the way that one hood guy turns and looks at the other one, like just that bit of like Steve Lieber is an excellent artist. And the way that he just did the body language there, I was like, that is perfect.
It's sort of it reminded me of the Klansman in Django Unchained. That awkwardness. But yeah, I love that moment.
I really like the scene in the pet shop where they rob the pet shop because he just gets really frustrated by the little girl. I thought that sequence worked really well as it really it crystallized for me a lot of like, okay, these guys are just really dumb villains.
Well, I think when Marvel went, whenever their change was, their heroes, whatever, like their thing right now is really big, intense villains that are super bad. And this is one of those like, it's just fun.
Well, these are like the Flash Rogues, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And it, but like in a Marvel context, which feels a little bit different. They've got their stupid outfits, and the one guy's really afraid, and it worked for me the whole way through. I thought it was a ton of fun.
Yeah, like the Shocker hiding, like he's not hiding under the table, but he's call him a coward, and he's taking money that people dropped. And yeah, that was.
Well, and I also like that the Speedster character is really reluctant to actually use his super speed because he gets tired.
He's talking about traffic in
Manhattan. Right. Yeah. So he's like constantly out of breath, and he's like, man, just because I go at super speed doesn't mean carrying things easier.
Yeah, and before anybody writes in and says like I am accusing Spencer of stealing the idea of the Flash Rogues. I know that there was this is the Sinister Syndicate. They're being called the Sinister Six, even though there's five of them, which is kind of funny. But this does go back to the it's not called the Superior Foes of Spider-Man, but the Sinister Foes of Spider-Man. But there have been these characters before, and so I like that they're bringing that back, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the interaction between them and Doc Ock Spider-Man.
I hope folks read this because it was a lot of fun, and I want to read more. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, very fun.
I'm still reading Green Arrow 22. I'm still reading Green Arrow. And I think I narrowed it down to it's better than the other DC books. Now that's a grain of salt, obviously, but I'm still intrigued enough to keep reading it.
Well, our thesis is that it's not Oliver Queen. It's not the Oliver Queen that we know.
Yeah, no, that helps a lot.
And that's not necessarily fan entitlement. It's just like this character bears no similarities.
None.
And it's not just because he doesn't have the goatee. It's just like
that's a huge part of it.
He's Iron Fist. That's what this is.
Yeah, that is really what
that's the thesis. And I mention that every time we talk about this. So moving on, Count Vertigo kind of dope in this book.
Yeah,
Count Vertigo usually a ridiculous character. But here they do some really cool things, and Sorrentino, he's doing this cool thing where he does the detail, like those inserts of the arrow flying or the impact or whatever hitting the guy's jaw, and he does it here, and he loses a tooth. But the scene where Count Vertigo like is sort of coming into the picture, and we don't know what it is yet, but Ollie's standing there, and some of those frames, some of those panels are out of their housing, you know, like they're dislodged. And you see the white square. Yeah, like puzzle pieces. And it's such an inventive way to show disorientation and the whole, like, because how do you convey vertigo other than having, like, you know, lines around a person's head or something?
I did also like his two support people. Yes. Having made all the arrows for him, and they're kind of the one-upmanship. I usually find that kind of dialogue really frustrating, but in this, I thought it was just playful enough to work where, mm-hmm. you know, they each have developed kinds of different kinds of arrows for him and Ollie's reactions to the different kinds of arrows and how impressed he is by one versus the other. I enjoyed that. And I like that him having somebody in a headpiece to talk to means that you don't have to have him just narrating it in narration
Thank
boxes.
God.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think it's getting better. I think Sorrentino, who's no slouch to begin with, is I think these pages are getting better too. I think we had a couple of issues with coloring in the first one or two.
Yes.
I feel like those have been straightened up. Yeah,
they're doing some great stuff with color here, especially with the Count Vertigo thing.
Yeah, it was in that page where like he discovers the dragon on the ground, and it's that big circular sort of thing, and the dress or whatever is all splayed out. Just really, really
yeah,
nice.
So at this point, I'm willing to just put the character discrepancy behind me and just enjoy this for what it is. And
it's probably a top five DC book because it's not a lot to compete with. But I'm like, well,
yeah, it's I think it's definitely up there.
Yeah, and it's getting better, so that's always super fun. speaking of super fun, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. I want you to click on there, and I want you to buy just everything you've been thinking about buying. I don't want you to worry about paying for it. I want you to just put it on a credit card. That's going to come. Because what I've been told is that if you just hope for the best, it's going to work out. So stop waiting for those things. Again, ifanboy.com/Amazon, and I just go crazy at Amazon. We'll get a little piece of that insanity, and you'll get all that stuff you want. You're going to want to sign up for Amazon Prime. For one thing, because they can get there in 2 days, or if you want to pay a little bit extra, one day. So it's going to help you in the short term. It's going to help us in general. And we are not responsible for what you do.
Yeah, it's great because when the guys come to repossess that, you know, jacuzzi that you got for your backyard with the plank, so you could walk the plank, mm-hmm. when they're repossessing that, they're not taking the money back from us. We still get.
I actually don't think that's true. I think you guys will lose your commissions for stuff that gets returned.
So if you hear the repo man coming, what we need you to do is load up the van and just get the hell out of there. Because I think they've got to repossess it to get our stuff. Other than that, can't be our fault.
Well, it's not Amazon coming to repossess the stuff. It's the creditors, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you can buy like a ton of sex toys on Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to want to erase that from your history or it's going to really skew your suggestions. Anyway.
Ryan, tell us about Fairest number 17.
So are any of you guys reading this?
No.
No.
It's Crocodile Hair. It's a great
yes,
cover.
No. Adam Hughes has been killing it with all the coverage for yes. this series. But this is a Fables spinoff book. This is kind of the book that is replacing the Cinderella books that Chris Roberson was doing for a while. Mm-hmm. And this is a series of disparate arcs kind of covering the events of the quote-unquote fairest of the lands. So we had a Rapunzel story where it's Rapunzel in the Japanese fairy world or fable world, which was awesome. And this story, which is being written by Sean Williams and drawn by someone I'm not familiar with, who's being drawn by Steven Sandowski, is set in Indu, which is the Indian fable world, and it's about what happened to Prince Charming after the war to overthrow the adversary. So we thought he was gone. We thought he died in the explosion that destroyed one of the gates in and out of the homelands, but Prince Charming's back. He's a Maharaja in Indu, and he's teaming up with local girls trying to save their village from demons and fighting crocodiles with scimitars. It's awesome.
Hmm. I love scimitars. Avengers AI number one, I wanted to mention briefly. This is Sam Humphries and Andre Lima on Andrejo. I might be getting that pronunciation wrong, but really interesting. Andre does kind of the first pages of his that I'd seen were like it was anthropomorphized animal people, like lizard people and stuff. And so he did like a really great organic kind of arts and like the natural world. And so when I heard that this same artist was going to be doing robot stuff and an entire Avengers team with like the Vision and a Doom bot and the kid from Runaways who has robot powers and is like,
yeah, I forgot about it. He's another son of Ultron.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he's like sort of like Vision's half brother. And that's sort of the interaction. And so seeing that it's really kind of cool. And he's got kind of a, in his line, it's a little bit like Frank Quitely. And I likened it to the way Quitely drew like Parasite in All-Star Superman. And so to see robots like that, and so to see like the vision like spread out into a bunch of like nano robots is pretty cool. It adds like this extra dimension. You don't have to draw robots the same way every time and do kind of like a, I don't know, Transformers or, you know, Evangelion kind of thing. You can do something different. And that's what this was. And this was a lot of fun too. And it reminded me just how cool the Vision is. Sort of like the Martian Manhunter of the Marvel Universe. He can like fly through stuff and just a really cool, fun, entertaining book. And I am on board for this.
Plus Petulant Doombot.
Yes. Yes.
And I liked that they gave all the different robot characters different colored word balloons, which makes it a lot easier to keep track of who's saying what when.
It is very, was a
very subtle, didn't distract, but was kept everything clear.
Yeah, and a great showcase for Hank Pym, too. Hank Pym, like, in an interrogation room, like, hitting a false fingertip to activate his whatever Pym particles to become Giant Man.
I think we're in a Hank Pym renaissance right now.
They're going for that. I don't know how successful it's going to be, but this is fun contained in this.
Are you reading Abe? I assume you're reading Abe Sapien.
Yes.
Number 4.
Mm-hmm.
This has been the one that was weird.
It was weird, yeah.
But I think they pulled it around with this one.
Yeah.
And I really dug. Basically, if you're reading the BPRD books, it's gone to hell. It's called Hell on Earth. The monsters have taken over. Everybody's turned into monsters. It's all crazy. And the thing that was cool about this was that we met these people who flock to the like site of these big crazy monster eggs who worship them and are weird. And Abe just sort of ends up at a campfire with a bunch of zealots, and they just kind of have a conversation. There's other stuff that happens, so that was sort of the most intriguing part of it. And my only criticism would be like okay, oh, we got to get moving with this Abe thing, because I feel like he got put into a coma like 2 years ago, and he's like, which by the way, this is par for the Hellboy course, so I can't really say I wasn't expected.
It is right, yeah. I agree with all those, but I love the new Abe Sapien design. Like, I like that he's sort of going through that Hank McCoy kind of second mutation thing. It's pretty.
He really doesn't want to be a frog, but you know what, guys? I think he's a frog.
I think he is.
Okay. Charles Soule took over. From Daniel Way as writer of Thunderbolts number 12. This one was drawn by Steve Dillon, and it's basically a Punisher story. I've been following the Thunderbolts. It's a weird team. It was pretty good.
That's some good Steve Dillon in there.
Yeah,
I hadn't been reading any of this. This was my first issue of the Thunderbolts, and I mean, this was great. I was amazed this wasn't a Max book.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good. I think got a little raped on the colors. That was harsh, but I don't think the colors weren't so great. But besides that, it was fun, and if the only place you've been able to read Steve Dillon has been with Daniel Way for a while. I think so. I think it's cool to see something else. And Charles has been doing really good work on stuff. I don't know if you've noticed, but he went from a guy that most people didn't know to a guy who's on like 4 ongoing books from Marvel and DC.
Something came out this week too, and Whiskey Tree. That's all I have to say about that. That was awesome.
I actually want to mention Swamp Thing really quick. Swamp Thing 22. He brought Constantine into that, and that, my friend, was actual Constantine, not new Constantine. And you,
I was curious about that. I didn't know if you would dig on it or not. And
yeah, well, it's... I read it professionally. I know that I said I'm not gonna go get the series or anything, but. It felt like him. I think there was a couple of points where I think he had the dialogue really well down for a bit. There's a couple of times he went a little more South London than Liverpool. but other than that, I thought it was pretty good.
It's also kind of tough to gauge because he's under the influence.
Yeah, but he looked like ratty old Vertigo Constantine. So I was
and there's a tree that grows whiskey.
Yeah, there's that too.
I think those two characters together are very
exactly similar. Like, it does not feel unnatural to see him standing there with Swamp Thing and to have Constantine be in that universe for that purpose. I get that. I would be cool with that. I would be fine with all of this if they hadn't canceled the book that I like.
All right, so Ryan, Final Plague, lots of rats.
Yeah, this is a new series from Action Lab, and it's a mature reader's book. It feels like it's building to be a zombie book, but right now it's just rats. It's written by J.D. Arnold and
I want that on a cover. It feels like it's building to be a zombie book, but right now it's just rats, Ryan. How's that, fanboy?
I would accept that plug. And the the artist is Guilliardi Brown. I hope I'm saying that right. But
basically, I guarantee you're not.
Okay, fair enough. But the art is beautiful. The art has kind of like a, I would say, watercolor Riley watercolor. Rossmo feel.
You know what it looks like? It looks like he was doing watercolors, and then he used like the drip cup, like all the dirty color, and then used that for all the rats and everything.
Yeah.
Because when we say watercolor, you usually think like kind of pastel kind of colors.
No.
And very soft. And this is very brackish looking.
Right. There's kind of two stories happening right now. There's this farm in Iowa that's getting overrun with these crazy, rabid, giant rats. And then there's a lab on the eastern seaboard that's doing some experiments with viruses, avian flu and the like, that's also working with rats. And it just seems like something is building where these rats are going to be causing some pretty serious problems. It has like a 28 Days Later sort of feel to it right now. And I'd be curious to – very curious to see where it goes.
I like that there's a warning on the front that's like it contains explicit content dealing with rats, farms.
it's graphic depictions of farms.
Of farms, yeah.
People want to know.
Secret of Nim bothered you. Just stay away.
So those were the books that we found interesting this week. Let's take a look at what you thought over in the user review section and the top five picks of the week. Number five, Sonic the Hedgehog, number 250, got 5.3% of your pick of the week vote. At number four, Green Arrow, number 22 at 9.2%. Number three, Batman Incorporated, number 12 at 10.3%. Number two, The Private Eye, number three, 11.1%. And number one, The Superior Foes of Spider-Man, number one, with a crazy but believable 41.1%.
That's
really huge.
I had no idea. I hadn't looked at that before now. That's
So,
and no one liked your book.
No one liked my book. But
I think I might have picked your book.
Yeah?
Yeah, or I might have picked the Spider-Man one because I just didn't expect it.
You know,
I probably would have picked your book.
I thought the Runaways would be, you know, like Private Eye and Batman Incorporated. I was not expecting Sonic the Hedgehog or, you know, I figured people would dig Superior Foes of Spider-Man, but that's a big percentage. Ryan, let's take a look at the first user review.
Yeah, so you can write a user review, and since you know we like to have other people talk about stuff besides just us, this one comes from Mike Anzad 21, who reviews Green Lantern 22. Gives the story a 2 out of 5, and the art a 3 out of 5. Pick of the Week percentage is 0.1%. When Geoff Johns ended his run, the Green Lantern books were primed and ready for a fresh new direction, complete with all new creative teams. What I fear we are seeing, however, is the oppressive hand of DC editorial overlords. With the second issue, I can't help but think that there is someone going over Robert Venditti's scripts, whispering in his ear, just do what Geoff did. The story feels like a retread of several of John's stories, dealing yet again with more lanterns of various colors attacking Oa and a prisoner escaping from the science cells. I know Venditti has the potential to be a great writer from his past works, but this just doesn't have that same spark. And I did read this. Do you guys bother?
No.
You know, I think we talked about it last week, that if there was, you know, wanting a tonal shift in anything, we came up with the Green Lantern books because it's been, you know, this way under Geoff Johns for so long.
You know, what's funny is that before Geoff Johns took over, we used to, like a long time ago, people used to ask us what needed to be revamped, and we always said Green Lantern. And then it was revamped, and then they just drove it into the ground for years. And now it needs it again. And I'll say this, the same thing that, you know, that the Green Lantern that Darwin Cook wrote in A New Frontier, that was the way. I still want to see more of that.
Yeah.
Kind of that a little. But
there's so many other ways, so many other things you can do, but just, and the problem is that Geoff Johns didn't just shape the way this book worked, but also Green Lantern Corps and all these other related titles. And
the reason that they can't change it though.
Right.
Is because there are going to be six Green Lantern books. So, you know, they have too much going. I mean, of course they're saying just do what Geoff did, or at least, you know, stick with that thing. That formula's worked pretty well for him, I guess. So.
And this is, even though this wasn't in the top five, this is still a very highly picked book on our site.
I didn't think this was a bad issue. I actually kind of disagree with Mike and Zod 21. Enjoyed it.
Had you been reading it?
I read the first Venditti issue. I think this is only his second issue.
Yeah,
that's right.
I thought this was fine. Like there's some new recruits who are seemingly very young and completely terrified to be Green Lanterns, which is kind of an interesting twist. And you know, it dealt with Larfleeze in two issues, and now we're moving on to a different escaped convict from the science cells, and Hal Jordan creates a Green Lantern construct A-10 Warthog plane. And yeah, I don't know. I dug it. I had fun.
That's the point of things. So it's good to go.
I think with comics, are we supposed to have fun still? Is that
they can?
Oh, we got rid of that.
That's not what we're saying. All right, so
DC's doing their best.
Invasion Force set of Earth 2, number 14, story 4 out of 5, art 4 out of 5, pick of the week percentage 1%. Evidently, James Robinson's efforts on this comic did not fit into DC Editorial's grand plan. A lot of conversation about DC Editorial. DC Editorial's grand plans for their universe. So Robinson felt obliged to go. It is hard to imagine, though, that what DC is planning could be anywhere near as entertaining as what Mr. Robinson was accomplishing on this title. I'm mostly a Marvel reader who was taken by Robinson's reimagining of this corner of the DC universe. For instance, I love what he did with the character of the Green Lantern. How do I love Nicola Scott's pencils? Let me count the ways. Actually, I suspect that the elements of her work that I love are too numerous to mention, but I'll refer to a few. Damn, girl, you draw the hero so sexy. Scott has one of the best eyes for anatomy in the comic industry. And yes, I chose that review so I could say, damn, girl. And I'm never going to do that again.
I don't believe that. I think you're going to take that clip and it's going to be your text tone. It's going to be mine. I can tell you that much. Yeah, it's too bad to watch somebody else get snuffed out again. I don't even want to be too... Well, I mean, that's what's happening. We all know. Anyway, so those are your reviews. If you read your books, you go through to ifanboy.com/comics. You can pick your books and rate them and write a review. And if you get them up early enough and they're a book that we aren't talking about somewhere else, then you got a pretty good shot at getting on the show. So please keep those up. We feel like they help. They add to the show. And
damn, girl.
You liar is what you are. Next up, we're going to take a shot at an audience question or two. See how we're doing. Dave from upstate New York, means prison, I'm pretty sure. Is there any particular creator or work that you previously dismissed that you now dig, or one that you liked and now have difficulty defending from a critic craft standpoint? That's a great question. I will not go first. I talk a lot.
Okay. An artist that I didn't get when I first, you know, encountered the work, Quapel on Thor. I remember back on the forums, me and Connor talking about how his Thor looked like a big chicken, like big thunder thighs, which I guess are appropriate for a thunder god. But since then, become one of my favorite artists.
It's interesting that you mention him, because one of the people I no longer feel like I can defend, who I did like when I was first getting into comics, is the writer of that same series, J. Michael Straczynski.
Yeah, but a lot of times he'll start and then...
I think the question is saying is that a oh okay
why?
it's just a sea change okay
I liked his Amazing Spider-Man run at the beginning, and I
did too.
Looking back on it, I would have a hard time defending it from a critic craft standpoint. I think I was just new to comics. I was really enjoying John Romita Jr.'s art on Spider-Man. I think he does a fantastic Spider-Man, and I wasn't in the comics world and scene like I am now, so that book really struck me as something new and different. And now in hindsight, I'm like, oh, that actually wasn't very good.
Well, let's talk about J. Michael Straczynski.
Oh.
No, I actually used to be a fan. The first time I ever heard of him was when Rising Stars came out.
Right.
And I really liked it. I was new at that point and had never read anything like it. But it did the same thing. Like, it started to disappear, and then like every time it came back, it was less interesting than it was before. And then it kind of, when it did finally end, he finished it, but it wasn't great. And then, you know, for me, the more I read it, the more I find his writing to be very heavy-handed.
Yes, and I found it to be he moralizes a lot, which bugs me. Although I will say I'm enjoying 10 Grand more than I ever thought that I would, another JMS book. But the moralizing is I feel very heavy-handed and draws me out of the story. Because I feel like I'm being lectured and preached at.
And at this point, like, I can't even be subjective about it because I see it. And as soon as I see it, it's like if you have a really close friend or something and you know them really well and they do something that irritates you, and it's never not going to irritate you because that's just what they're doing. It's not objectively bad. It's just a thing that I don't like.
There's another writer I can think of, Josh, that I know you and I both enjoyed some of his older work and probably maybe haven't enjoyed more recently, and that'd be Paul Jenkins.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that. I think I can't remember. I actually haven't read most of his Hellblazer stuff, which apparently was the sort of early stuff that's supposed to be pretty good. I haven't read it. But for a while, like specifically when he did Inhumans, which brings me to mine, you know, I thought was great stuff. And since then, it's just I don't even get it anymore.
Well, I'll come straight out and say that the original Marvel Knights Sentry book I thought was interesting and different and good. And yes, as a concept, it worked as a single story. And by the end of the Sentry's arc, we had the funeral issue that Paul Jenkins also wrote. And I'm just like, I don't even know what this is.
Yeah, I think that was a failure, but it was at least an interesting failure.
Josh, didn't you not like Esad Ribic at the beginning?
Yeah, that's one. I didn't love him on like the Ultimates or whatever. I think I just wasn't reading stuff that he did. But now that he's on Thor, I've definitely come around. I think it's excellent.
Not to call you out on anything.
That's fine. No, my big one would be Jay Lee.
Okay.
I used to think that Jay Lee was the bee's knees, and I used to like anything he drew. I was down with it, and I loved it, and now I find it extremely cold, and it doesn't do very much for me at all. It's interesting, I guess, from a graphic standpoint, but not very much from a comic book storytelling standpoint, and I don't
I can see that.
Like it anymore. I used to love it, and now I don't like it, which I think is pretty interesting. To go the other way, this
well,
is...
Well, I have one more for the current vein, because this is the first one that came to mind, and it's Geoff Johns. I really loved everything Geoff Johns was doing for a long time. And then as we were kind of gearing up towards the New 52, his work just lessened for me somehow. And I think
it was even before that.
Yeah, it was waning. But this is one of those I got to pull my as a scientist card. There's so many moments in a Geoff Johns book where I read something and I'm like, dude, a Google search would have told you that was wrong, let alone actually asking a scientist. And I know that that's something you have to accept in comics, but when it's not even a story point, it just comes across as incredibly lazy, and I get frustrated, and it takes me out of the book. And
was
so
it the
now
Copperhead
I just,
fight, the thing with
there's been
ears.
More than that. I mean, he mentioned in the first couple of issues of Aquaman, they talk about going into the trench at the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and you know, even just from a definition standpoint, a ridge and a trench are opposite things; they're not the same thing. So I was frustrated as a reader. I put that on a test that I gave to students. I said, what's wrong with what the marine biologist and Aquaman is saying right now? They had to answer it for credit.
Professor Haupt is weird. I know. What was with that? He's like a nerd, right? Yeah, I know. Totally.
Yeah, totally a nerd.
You know what's funny about Johns is that I didn't used to like him. Then I did. And now I'm not interested in the work he's doing.
Right.
I don't know why. I can't tell you what that is, because he definitely has something that nobody else has, and I just feel like he's been a little aimless in his work.
Just very, very quickly, just going back to the question, or one that you liked and now have difficulty defending from a critic craft standpoint, and my reading of that was sort of like a guilty pleasure sort of thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but an artist that I love but I can't always defend. Hergé, you know, with some casual racism. That's a problem. And I don't defend any of that. And yet Tintin has a lot of other things going for it and is very important, not just for my comic reading, but just in what things I'm interested in.
unlike somebody like Orson Scott Card, you could say that there is at least a cultural time. Not excuse.
There's
but.
No, yeah. It's you know, it's a very difficult,
yeah,
thing to even describe. But
okay, I want to stop talking about things we don't like anymore.
Yeah,
and I know that there's people. We can go. Let's go out on the stuff that we didn't used to like that we came around on. And for me, you know, the big ones. I've got a few, but you know, the big ones are just artists from earlier eras. I mean, you know, the biggest one would be Jack Kirby when I was younger. You know, when we first started doing iFanboy, I didn't get it. And now, you know, Kirby is God. Kirby is to, you know, Kirby is to comic books what Eric Clapton is to rock guitar, you know, more so than that. He's like Clapton, Elvis, and the Beatles and everything all at once. And I see that now and I know about it. And I want to slap the snot out of the younger version of me who was like, oh, he's blocky. I don't know. Same way I didn't used to like Sienkiewicz. At all. I didn't get it at all. And now every time that, you know, I see just a splash of ink that guy does, I'm like, that's gorgeous. Look at that thing. That's amazing.
I could say the same thing for Ennis and Dylan on Preacher.
I was going to say Garth Ennis. Yeah,
I avoided Preacher for a very long time because I thought that like that's just going to be like vulgar and, you know, like shock for shock's sake. And it is kind of vulgar throughout, but I get that's more a change in me. It's like
that's artful.
Like when I saw that cover with, you know, Ars face on it, I was like, that is nothing that I am remotely interested in. And it is my favorite, you know, self-contained comic book run. You know, like it's my favorite thing. And I enjoy both Ennis and Dylan now. So that's mine.
Yeah, Garth Ennis was the main one I came up with too. And I think something that I dismissed initially, but now enjoy quite a bit. When somebody first told me the concept of Fables, I thought that was really dumb. Sorry, Bill. But then they actually gave me the book and I read it and I was like, oh, this is not dumb. This is actually interesting.
I did that. I got on Fables and I dropped it. And then I came back.
Yeah.
Then I dropped it.
but for, you know, as far as like this person, they were a good friend and they just described the idea behind Fables. And I think they just went into too much detail, which
that'll
nerds
happen.
Can do.
Oh, don't ever talk to me about Doctor Who. I don't want to hear it.
But that was the concept of Fables from hearing it from that friend was something I dismissed. But then that same friend gave me the books. So
wibbly wobbly. I don't know. What does that mean?
The worst thing that never happened to Doctor Who was Doctor Who fans. Yeah, send your letters to paul@ifanboy.com. He didn't say it, but I don't want to deal with it. He likes Doctor Who, so it's fine.
I do like Doctor Who.
Like, he was like, I like it fine. Back off.
So we have another question from Blake from Chicago, who writes, I was wondering if any of you have any favorite story arcs or character ideas that you wish had been explored further or gone a different direction, which didn't either due to editorial mandate, like event tie-ins, or another creative reason. For example, in the Fraction Iron Man run, I wish they had explored the implications of Tony Stark becoming a fully post-human cyborg and what that would mean for his self-perception and worldview, as well as the fact that he was indebted to Reed Richards to help him create the Bleeding Edge armor. Do you have any that spring to mind?
The New 52 did a lot of interesting things to storylines that I liked. Things like, I think when you get into this question, you think about the character and maybe what costume they were wearing at a certain time and maybe stopped wearing. So switches in who was the superhero, like when Bart Allen was the Flash. I thought that was kind of interesting. It didn't last too long. And I think there could have been more of that.
There was also Wally West Kids.
I thought of that as well. There was more than enough of that.
There's no one's like, bring that back.
Yeah, no one.
Actually,
I don't think
Wally West.
Wally West.
Wally West is a good answer.
I think people are into the Wally West. Dick Grayson's Batman didn't last nearly as long as it could.
That's a perfect example, and it's one of the reasons that, and this is sacrilege to a certain. And I've always left a little tiny bit in the cold by the current Batman is that I was really enjoying that Snyder Jock Dick Grayson's Batman story, and it was just
in Detective,
yeah.
I love the new Batman stuff. I've been enjoying it throughout. But yeah, I do wish that he'd gotten to continue that for a year, 2 years longer. I mean, let that run, because those relationships were great with Dick and Alfred and Dick and Damian. And it was a different flavor of Batman, and I really enjoyed that a lot. So and you know, the one everyone, you know, Stephanie Brown is Batgirl. I could always do with more of that. And I just to see Stephanie at all would be great. I love that character, and I love the way Brian Q. Miller wrote her. That's the big thing.
In a couple of months, we'll say Thor. I think that'll be the three Thors. That'll be the answer. That's your future answer for this one.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I'm keeping it in the Batman universe, a book that I would have liked to have seen explored further and was ruined because of editorial tie-ins might have to be Gotham Central as the pinnacle of that problem.
Oh, the ending.
Yeah, because that's not a natural conclusion to that.
Nope. It was actually a supernatural conclusion.
Right.
That's what it was.
Yeah,
that was kind of the problem.
Didn't fit along with anything. That's a great answer.
I also think that a lot of the Wildstorm characters that have been introduced into the DC proper with the New 52 have been completely squandered.
You just actually, Wildcats 3.0.
Hmm.
That was a story that just ended, and he was going to go so many more interesting places, and that just gone. I don't
Amalgam, think when they combined all the DC and Marvel characters together, I think that could keep going. I'd like to explore that world a little further.
Pronounce Amalgam.
I'm pretty sure I had enough of that. I don't think you can answer this question without bringing up the Sopranos, because every one of those – sorry. No, I know it's not related, but Richie Aprile, Ralph, Furio, all of those stories just cut off. And
you could also do this with relationships. That a lot of times those are the threads that get just abandoned. So things like Stargirl and Captain Marvel, or Shazam, as he's now known. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of like a weird.
Well, I was also thinking about when Starman and Captain Marvel teamed up in James Robinson's book.
Hmm.
That kind of came out of nowhere, and it didn't mess up the world James Robinson was exploring in any way. But it did take the book in a different direction for a few issues, obviously because of some larger tie-in. That when you're just reading Starman, it comes out of left field, doesn't really make any sense, and then it's gone.
That sort of grabs your nuts on the whole story, just yanks. All right, come on. Okay, it's over.
Here's one. How about the status quo in Paul Dini's Detective Comics when you do those episodic sort of mysteries, and the through line would be the Riddler as a kind of detective, a very interesting relationship between Batman and the Riddler. And also in that run, I liked Batman and Zatanna together.
Yeah, I like that too.
That's always an interesting combination. I think New Krypton is a really interesting concept, and it started off really strong. I actually really like that idea, and it just kind of went nowhere, and they had to erase it. That was the thing. They had to blow everything up, and I wish that could be just a continuing status quo kind of thing.
So remember when Starfire was Buddy Baker's babysitter?
Very briefly, yeah.
Sword of the Atom. That's a cool idea.
Okay, all right. That's many answers to your question.
Yes, it is. If you have any emails you'd like to send us, any questions, you can send those to contact@ifanboy.com or a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697. We also have other podcasts. Go look for them. check out ifanboy.com for the Pick of the Week review and more in-depth comic book commentary and all the important news and discussion topics. Go to ifanboy.com/about to see the staff of ifanboy and their social network links. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and stay in touch on facebook.com/ifanboy.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc.
If you like us, then what we're going to need is your help. You need to take your iTunes, you got to go in there, you find the iFanboy, you're going to type up a little review. Listen, I'm not going to lie, I hope it's a positive review. But that's up to you. This is a free country, presumably. Also, if there are things that you see that you like, say, on the website, you want to put those up on your Twitters and your Facebooks, you want to throw things around you think you might enjoy, that is always a huge help to us. If you can help spread the word, you are our marketing and advertising department, it turns out, and the pay is crap. So you'll have to deal with that. But
we swear he's used the internet before.
Yeah.
All right. So that is it for this week's show. We hope that you're healing well from all of your sparkler-related injuries.
Let's give Ryan his plug.
Yeah.
It's the only reason I'm here.
Yeah. Let's get it over with, sort of.
What do you do, Ryan?
I do science on the weekdays, and on the weekend evenings, I do a podcast called Science Sort Of. It's a show about things that are science, things that are sort of science, and things that wish they were science. If you want to learn something about science, it's a show that you might enjoy, maybe.
I like how you say do science the way that Pat Robertson says do sex.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not dissimilar.
What are you doing? Doing science.
It's on iTunes. It's in a different section of the iTunes. So once you're done writing your iFanboy review, just go to the Science and Medicine section, and it's probably higher placed than iFanboy is in the culture or whatever section they're in.
Oh. It's just like Beekman's World without the guy in the rat suit.
Yeah.
Listen, Josh, these boots fit great, and I did a really long hike in them yesterday, and I'm loving them.
Yeah, I could use a new pair of boots, if I'm being honest.
So until next week, keep cool. I'm Paul.
I'm Ryan.
And I am Josh Flanagan. Thank you for your patronage.
Damn, girl.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.